All right. The Renaissance. Does he declare the Renaissance to be a good time or a bad time? Yeah, neither one. Does he speak against the art of the Renaissance? No. You know, he even there at the end to go through Florence and if you are not stirred by such a thing, you know, you are a poor man indeed. To not go, David, there's perspective when he's standing beside the hand and the hand is this big. This is a single block of marble that was rejected by sculptors and Michelangelo saw David in the marble. And to carve that out, that's extraordinary. To look at the school of Athens as he's standing on the scaffolding and all of the detail there, and he's a little bitty man on this huge painting, the Sistine Chapel, great movie with Charlton Heston and I forget the other guy, George Mason, right. James Mason. Great movie about Michelangelo's agony in painting that, because he didn't see himself as a painter, he saw himself as a sculptor. And he didn't want to paint this, but he was commissioned to paint this, and he hated it. But so, what was the thing about the Renaissance that caused Schaeffer angst? What was
the humanistic approach?
Okay. What is humanism? He spoke of it a couple of times, alluded to. He never sat there and defined humanism.
Separate yourself from God, essentially. It's like, I picked up one. It's trying to be autonomous from him.
Okay. Would a humanist say that is his intent?
No.
Okay.
I think he would say there is no God. It's only
us. Okay, excellent. So he's... We would say he's untethering himself from God, but he's going, there is no God from which to untether myself. So he is starting out going, I am it. So now what? I am going to understand all that is around me. My place in the world itself, I'm going to try and understand these things starting really from me. That's all I have. That's all I know. It's me. And so the humanist, you know, there's almost that rejection of God even at the very beginning. One of the ways we see man rising to a point of prominence was, and I wrote down, the artist becomes the rock star. Before the Renaissance, the artist was largely unknown. I mentioned last week, do you know who built Notre Dame? And, you know, he's reciting, hey, this guy built this bell tower and this guy built this dome, and everybody knew that. You know, there are now biographies and autobiographies and self-portraits and selfies. You know, that was the first selfie. It was a, you know, self-portrait there. And you see man essentially start to be elevated. What does Renaissance itself mean? What does the word mean?
Rebirth.
Okay. Rebirth. And this kind of came out in the attitude that those within the Renaissance gave to the previous time. And they referred to the Middle Ages as the the Dark Ages. Why?
Because they saw themselves in the Light Ages.
Well, yeah.
They saw nothing good come out of the Middle Ages. They didn't see advancement. They didn't see anything like that at all. They didn't see it.
Was that part because of the plague? I mean, just trying to survive at that point?
No, plague was what it was.
More had to do with the fall of Rome and the fact that there wasn't any advancement or any art or anything. I mean, in a way, the Dark Ages kind of were the Dark Ages.
You missed last week. We saw that there was great art in the Dark Ages, and there was great architectural advances. And so And we look back and we'll say the same thing. We hop on that bandwagon, but we really haven't looked into the Dark Ages.
So is it saying that it was dark in the fact that man did not ascribe it to see God in the universe?
I would say actually in the light. I would say it's the opposite. It's dark to them because the people that built all those great things didn't ascribe it to themselves, whereas the Renaissance... You know, look what I did. It's awesome. You know, and you're enlightening everybody to them, as opposed to the Dark Ages, the artists. And they didn't ascribe it to me.
Do you recall Schaefer mentioned the men of the Renaissance looking back at the Middle Ages as the Dark Ages, but they looked to something else as a Golden Age. What did they look back to and went, oh? Greece, okay, ancient Greece, which was founded on, gods, pagan gods, and, we
basically just stylized, idealized humans.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I'll call that almost a historic arrogance. It's a historic arrogance. That in that day they saw themselves as vastly superior to the men of the Middle Ages. Oh, we know so much more now. I mean, look at the things that Da Vinci was creating. Look at the architecture. Look at the architecture that we have now during the Renaissance that they didn't have back then. Do you smell that at all today? I mean, what would you call the 1950s?
I think they call it backwards.
Yes. I mean, you will hear in our culture people refer back to the middle 1900s, the 1800s, 1700s backwards. Look at how repressive those cultures were. And I'm not saying they were perfect. I mean, the fact that we were buying and selling human beings that's a downer. Okay. But we and really every time in human history has a historical arrogance to it, thinking that everything that preceded was bad. Can that be? I mean, that can't be.
Part of it could be, but not all of it.
No.
Do you think also maybe the quickness of advancement? Because like I remember listening to Miss Mary Taylor talk about using an outhouse for a restroom when she was a kid, and then all of a sudden, just in her lifetime, it's completely. Whereas, advancement before might have taken several generations. Now it's like, it's within one generation.
Technology is a good, can be used as a good, it can be used as an evil as well. But technological advancement does not make a people better. What do we do with those technologies? The art, you know, let's go back to the art here. The Red Virgin was there a problem with that painting?
No, there wasn't a problem with the painting. It was a problem with who sat for the painting.
Okay, well.
Because if we looked at it today, we would say, oh, isn't that a picture of the Virgin?
Some of us are probably...
Yeah, that's kind of out of proportion, but...
It's like all these red devils around it. Like,
yeah,
it's kind of creepy. Yeah.
It's pretty dark.
But yes, if you don't know, that's merely a woman's face there. But if you know that that's the face of Monica Lewinsky on there, you go, oh. It takes on a whole different meaning to the people of that time. So, as an artist, what are you saying? If you are painting something that looks very much like the Madonna with child, but it's all in blacks and reds, and you're putting the king's adulteress, or the adulterous king's mistress, you're putting, what are you saying as an artist?
It's like taking a cross and sticking it in a cup of urine.
Okay. You're making a statement. You are taking something that people hold high, that people revere greatly, and you are smearing. You are smearing it. You're making a statement. Now, what an anti-religious statement is made by a simple painting or a movie that makes a mockery of pick your story in the Bible or a play or a TV show or anything like that. I mean, we see it all the time, and it is our art. Was who speaking out against whom?
Whoever drew the red bird.
Oh, it was scandalous.
So was he speaking out against the king, or was he making an anti-religious point?
I think the king commissioned that.
I don't recall.
No.
I would hardly say that it is laudatory or praising the story of the virgin birth of Christ. So, you'd be hard. Now, you go, wow, you know, it is an incredible work. There's an extraordinary detail in the colors. It makes it very stark. And looking at it by itself, but the intention behind this thing is very important. Intention is very important. Now, toward the end, he gets into the end of humanism. He keeps pointing to the end of humanism, because the first half he's merely revealing this is the Renaissance. These were the things that came out of the Renaissance. This is the art, more just almost like a documentary. But he points to the symptoms. You go, there's like a general sniffles within this era, a cough that doesn't seem to go away. Man as a machine and humanism ending in despair. Why would he say, and he used Da Vinci as the example, why would he say that humanism is going to ultimately, if taken to its end, is going to lead to despair?
Because people are just tools to be used.
Okay.
person who is assigning the value.
Okay.
I think the bigger problem is that when with humanism, you're placing yourself as the center of your own universe. Everybody is the center of their own universe. There are no moral absolutes. You create your own moral absolutes. And so, for a lot of people, that just becomes overwhelming.
That and then I assign your value. Mm-hmm. So to me, you're less valuable, so I'm going to use you however I see fit. And then you look at me, I'm less valuable to you, you'll try to use me, and then there's that conflict there. And then it ends up being who's the most powerful.
Can I ultimately find objective meaning to the cosmos if I start with myself?
Yeah.
No.
Sorry.
Can I find objective? No, I can't, because I'm going to say I have it, and Corbin's going to go,
no,
I don't think so. I think it's this. And Jacob's going to go, no, and Liz is going to go, no, I think it's this. And Kate's going to go, you're all smoking dope. Okay. No, we can't.
And then she'll say, I'll sell you something.
We're going to see this play out. We're going to see this play out as it gets into the 1800s, 1900s. And ultimately, we have the philosophies of Friedrich Nietzsche and the art of Jean-Paul Sartre. And these men are unashamed atheists. And as they lived out this absolute atheism to the very end, at the end of their lives, these guys are in absolute despair. It's tragic. It is a tragic end. But this is, and to take it into the Word of God, there is nothing new under the sun. Somebody tried this once before. It was Solomon. In Ecclesiastes chapter 2, Solomon says, "So I became great and surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remained with me, and whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure, for my heart found pleasure in all my toil, and this was my reward for all my toil. But then I considered all that my hands had done, and the toil I had expended in doing it, and behold, all was vanity and a striving after the wind, and there was nothing to be gained under the sun." I love Ecclesiastes. I love Ecclesiastes because here, throughout this painful book, is man trying to find meaning in the particulars. Wisdom. Okay, I'm going to study wisdom. Meaningless. I'm going to, he talks about building things and sensing things. And I how many wives and concubines? I mean, good grief. Did he deny himself? He denied himself nothing. And he gets to the end and it's empty, meaningless, a striving after the wind. And really, again, in the Renaissance, we see this just start to percolate, this tension. Great example, Da Vinci at the very end where he's in despair. Going, I mean, what a man Da Vinci was. What a man. Genius. And coming to terms with life. Next week, we are going to look at men who came to terms. And despite extraordinary conflict, found peace. And that was in the Reformation. So the Reformation ultimately is going on concurrent to the Renaissance. So as the Renaissance is struggling or is pouring out of the cultural world, the Reformation is taking place within the spiritual world. All right, any other comments on the work today, Schaefer's video?